Now, this is the third jhanic formula. Here we have various new things fading away of rapture. One dwells in equanimity, mindful and discerning, and one experiences the bliss of which the noble one say, happily lives one who is equanimous and mindful, thus one enters and dwells in the third jhana. Now here, fading away of rapture sometimes we call joy. Joy and happiness, these are very important factors to gain concentration. You remember, joy arises from by overcoming restlessness and worry. And happiness arises from getting rid of your anger, hatred. When you go on practicing, as your restlessness and worry arises, you feel like a slave. When it goes away, you feel you are full of joy. And then you have happiness because of the disappearance of hatred. Now, joy and happiness seem to be very close to each other. Sometimes one may say one is joyful in lieu of happiness, or sometimes one say I'm happy or I'm full of joy. In ordinary conversations, ordinary language, we have to remember Dhamma language, make the distinction with Dhamma language from ordinary language. Secular language, we use certain words in secular language, and perhaps the same word we may use for spiritual matters. So spiritual language and Dhamma language, what you call secular language, although they are, they seem to be the same, but the meaning is different. In secular language, joy and happiness are used for excitement. When you are full of joy or full of happiness, you say, when you are full of excitement, you say you are happy or full of joy. For instance, if you get, you meet somebody whom, a very dear one whom you had not seen for long, long time, and all of a sudden you meet this person, then you would say either you are full of joy or full of happiness. What you really mean is you are full of excitement. And to express this excitement, you might talk, you might smile, you might laugh, you might kiss, you might hug, you might talk, you might even laugh, even cry, shedding tears of joy. That is the way how you express your excitement. However, when joy and happiness in the meditation practice arises, you don't do that. You don't jump up and down from your cushion and say, "Oh, I'm happy. I'm full of joy." We don't say that. The more joyful, more happy in meditation, you become more calm, more relaxed, more peaceful, serene, composed, collected. And joy and happiness also are related. I use the word joy instead of rapture. Both mean the same thing. Joy arises in anticipation of something. Happiness arises when what you have anticipated is accomplished. For instance, when you, this is very vivid simile, so that you may remember it, remember the difference between these two. Suppose you are traveling in a desert. As you know, desert doesn't have water, no trees, no roads, no signs, no people, nothing. Just assume that it is dry desert without sandy desert. And you don't know where you go, because there are no road signs, no directions. And because of that, you will be tired, thirsty, hungry, and weary and full of worries. And then suddenly, you see somebody coming towards you with wet hair, wet clothes, fresh face, and smile on his face. Then you would ask him, now, I'm also traveling in the same desert, but look at me. I'm so dry, full of worry, and so forth, but you look so fresh. What is your secret? He would say, well, I happen to see an oasis, a lake in the middle of the desert. I jumped in it, swam in it, drank plenty of fresh, good water, ate lotus roots, lotus buds, and spent a lot of time in there and got refreshed. When you hear this, every word that this man uses to describe his experience of the lake, water, lotus, and so forth, every word makes you glad. And every step you go towards, he would say, go in this direction, you would walk. Every step you take towards that direction, your joy increases. As you get closer, you will hear birds singing, you know, people jumping into water, and perhaps children playing, talking, and so forth. More you hear, the closer you get, the sounds become louder and you become more and more joyful. So as soon as you see the water, you jump into it, swim in it, drink water and so forth, and then spend a lot of time in it and come out of that lake, and stretching your hands and legs, you lie down on the bank of the lake saying, ah, what a happiness. That is happiness. Then you may even go to sleep. You are so contented, so satisfied. So happiness is like that. Now, in this jhana, you let go of your joy. Joy in this, when you attain the second jhana, you have joy and happiness. When you attain the second jhana, that joy you experience is compared to the the calmness of a lake, again, which is very calm, it has very gentle springs at the bottom, bringing fresh water into the lake, and from time to time there will be very gentle, soft rain to wash away whatever the dirt is on the surface of the water. And the water continuously be refreshing. Similarly, when you have joy, it keeps coming, increasing slowly and gradually, again and again you feel it is just like soothing, lulling feeling you get from this joy. Yeah, refreshing. And this is the joy that you let go of when you attain the second jhana. Why? Since it is so comfortable, so relaxing, so peaceful, you should keep it. But it says, fading away of rapture. Rapture fades away when you attain the second jhana. Why does it fade away? Because, you know, when you attain this rapture, you find in the second jhana. When you keep, when you attain the second jhana, what you did before was you let go of your initial application of thought, sustained application of thought, because they were haunting your mind. You lose interest in them. Similarly, when you want to attain the third jhana, you keep attaining the second jhana again and again and again and again, hundreds of times, until this so peaceful, so comfortable, relaxing, refreshing joy becomes less effective, stale, not so interesting. The mind loses interest in this joy because it is so repeating. As I said, anything, no matter how wonderful it is, when you first experience, it gives you a thrill. And experience again and again and again and again, you lose interest in that. That happens with everything, even in spiritual practice. Until, of course, we attain the higher level of spiritual attainments. These are all mundane attainments. This is the very nature of mundane attainment, no matter how great they are. Attaining jhana is superb, wonderful, but still it is mundane. So you lose interest in that, and then when you say you attain it 500 times, and the 501st time when you attain it, your mind has lost all interest in joy, and the mind naturally glides into the third jhana, leaving joy behind. That is one thing. Another thing dwells in equanimity. In the first jhana, second jhana, we did not talk about equanimity, although it is there in the second jhana, in the first and second. But it is not very conspicuous, not very clear. It's not a prominent factor in the first or second jhana. But as soon as the rapture fades away, it became prominent. And then another factor, we have mindfulness. Mindful and discerning, that is sati sampajanya in Pali. Mindfulness and comprehension. It, in Pali it is called Satocha Sampajano. Satocha Sampajano. You become more mindful and your comprehension, understanding is clear. Now where does that come from? All of a sudden. We were not talking at the beginning of mindfulness, but when you come to the third jhana, we start talking about something new, like equanimity, mindfulness, and discerning. We did not talk about them at the beginning. And also, equanimity, mindfulness, and discerning are not the opposite of any particular hindrance. And therefore, in this jhana, in jhana we have initial application of thought, sustained application of thought, joy, happiness and concentration. But now we have mindfulness, comprehension and equanimity. Because, you know, we started, if you remember the Noble Eightfold Path, for this reason I showed the other day Noble Eightfold Path. What is the seventh factor of Noble Eightfold Path?
Mindfulness.
So, you practice mindfulness in order to make concentration easy. No matter how much concentration we gain, the concentration alone is not going to make your jhana effective. It has to have mindfulness. Because it is the mindfulness which has the power of attention. So you got to keep coming again, back again and again and again to your object of meditation with sati, with mindfulness, with attention. Attention is absolutely necessary for any practice. Without attention, we even don't know what is going on. And that is why the Buddha said, Manasikara Sambhava Sabbe Dhamma. All mental phenomena arise through attention, from attention. Manasikara Sambhava. Manasikara is attention, Sambhava is arising. When we pay attention to something, then something emerges. Or when something emerges, because of our attention, we know that. If we do not pay attention, we don't know what is going on. So, mindfulness is absolutely necessary to practice right concentration. We are talking about samma samadhi. As I said, concentration also can be unwholesome concentration as a wholesome concentration. For the wholesome concentration, mindfulness is absolutely necessary. That is how wholesome concentration becomes different or distinguishes from unwholesome concentration. Unwholesome concentration does not have mindfulness. Wholesome concentration has mindfulness. And therefore, when you come to the third, from the beginning we have it, but when we come to the third jhana, it becomes more prominent and strong. Again, discerning, understanding clearly what is happening. Then one experiences the bliss of which the noble one say. Here bliss actually is another word for happiness. సతోజ సంపదాను సుఖంచ కాయని పరిసంగేది. దట్ ఇండివిజువల్ హ్యాపీలీ లివ్స్ అన్ ఆర్యన్ సేస్ దిస్ వన్ ద నోబల్ వన్ సే నాట్ అన్ ఓర్డినరీ పీపుల్ ఓన్లీ నోబల్ వన్ సే హూ ఆర్ ద నోబల్ వన్స్ noble ones are the ones who have mindfulness and the clear comprehension. Nobles are the ones who have who understand the dhamma, and they are the ones who give the certificate. They are the ones who recognize, and they are the ones who say happily lives one who is equanimous and mindful. Why do they say that? How can they say that? They can say that because they are the ones who have gone through this, who have experienced it. And therefore, they say, happily lives one who is equanimous and mindful. In this stage, happiness arises happiness and equanimity makes your mind and body so full of happiness that it is compared to a lotus. Lotus from the root to the top. Every tiny little cell of the lotus plant, leaves, flowers, everything is filled or saturated with water. Not one single cell of the lotus root, the plant, the stalks, leaves, flowers is without water. Similarly, when you are in this jhana, entire body and mind every cell in your body is filled and charged with this happiness. It is called sukhancha kayena patisangvedita. You live with happiness, experiencing happiness not only physically but even mentally. Not only mentally but even physically. That means you experience it as a mental state, and also you experience it on your body. And everything is every cell, every part, every drop of your blood, everything from top to toes, everything is charged with this experience of happiness. And yet, because of the presence of equanimity, you are not attached to it. Because of the presence of mindfulness, you are not attached to it. Because of the presence of discerning, understanding, you are not attached to it. So, see the qualities you gain when you attain the third jhana. You have happiness, you have equanimity, you have mindfulness, you have understanding, and you feel every tiny little part of your body and mind charged with this experience. And yet, mind is so clean, clear, because of the presence of mindfulness, equanimity, understanding, you don't become attached to it. And you keep, you may lose it. That moment of attainment, you may lose it. And you keep attaining it again and again and again and again, until you lose interest in what is called happiness. Then you go to the, what do you call, last jhana, fourth jhana. What are the qualities of fourth jhana? With the abandoning of pleasure and pain, and with the previous disappearance of joy and grief, here we use the word joy and grief. One enters and dwells in the fourth jhana, which has neither pain nor pleasure, and has purity of mindfulness due to equanimity. Now, we abandon joy when you attain the third jhana. We abandon grief when we attain the first jhana. And we have no pain when we attain the third jhana. And now, abandon pleasure. Of course, when we attain the first jhana, you abandon, because remember the first jhanic attainment is quite secluded from sense pleasures and secluded from unwholesome state of mind. That is how the first jhanic formula starts. quite secluded from sense pleasures, secluded from unwholesome state of mind, one enters and dwells in the first jhana, which has initial application of thought and sustained application of thought. So that is the first jhana. There we, when we attain the first jhana, we abandon the greed or attachment, clinging, craving for sensual pleasure. So, abandoning the pleasure and pain. And then we abandon joy when we attain the third jhana, abandon grief when we attain the second jhana, enters and dwells in the fourth jhana, which has neither pain nor pleasure and has purity of mindfulness due to equanimity. And the last phrase is extremely important to remember. And it has neither pain nor pleasure. What is neither pain nor pleasure? Equanimity. That is another name for equanimity, which we saw in the third jhana. Has purity of mindfulness. Now remember, we start the third Noble Eightfold, in the third steps of the Noble Eightfold Path is mindfulness. It becomes pure only when we attain the fourth jhana. You can practice mindfulness many, many, many times for a long period of time. It will not become pure until you attain the fourth jhana. Now you can see, this is where the practice of the Noble Eightfold Path comes to its climax. This is the, culmination of the practice of the Noble Eightfold Path, with the practice of fourth jhana. And therefore, practice of jhana is not sort of a secondary practice. And don't think it is we can achieve the the highest result of meditation without practicing jhana. You can see here. These are not my words, these are the Buddha's own words. We translated into English. And he says, purity of mindfulness due to equanimity, mindfulness becomes pure because of the presence of equanimity in the fourth jhana. So, what should we do with the fourth jhana? When we come to the fourth jhana, according to Abhidhamma, there is one more jhana. It's called fifth jhana. And in the sutras, we always talk about four jhanas. Abhidhamma talks about five jhanas. How can there be five jhanas? Why should there be five jhanas in Abhidhamma, whereas we have four jhanas in sutras? It is because of the individual's emotional and intellectual capacities. Somebody is very intellectual, that person can attain or overcome all the hindrances by attaining four jhanas. And one who is not that intellectual will need five jhanas. It is just like when you climb a mountain, suppose there are five resting places. A very experienced mountain climber, healthy, strong, young, experienced, would rest on the first resting place and then skip the second, because he's so robust, strong, healthy, he doesn't have to rest on every resting place. He rests on the first and then skip the second and go to the third, fourth, and skip the second and then go to the third, fourth, and fifth. For him, there will be four resting places. For the weaker one like us, old, not very fit, not experienced, we have to rest on every resting place when we climb. So, when we practice jhana, somebody who needs a lot of time to practice, lot of training, not very highly intellectual, would overcome initial application of thought when he attains the second jhana. When he attains the third jhana, he overcomes sustained application of thought. When he attains the fourth jhana, he overcomes joy. When he attains the fourth jhana, he will overcome happiness. The fifth jhana, he overcomes happiness. So he needs one jhana to overcome one hindrance. Since there are five hindrances, he needs five jhanas. Whereas a more intellectual person would overcome two hindrances when he attains the second jhana. Two hindrances are initial application, restlessness and worry, he overcomes when he attains the second jhana. Less intellectual would overcome restlessness at one time, worry at another time. So he needs to one additional jhana. Overcoming those hindrances, he overcome initial application of thought one time and sustained application of thought another time and so forth. So, this is how we have five jhanas. Now, these jhanas, although the fourth jhana has purity of mindfulness and so forth, still the fourth jhana is in the mundane level. We can gain supramundane level of jhana, and we can use jhanas to attain supramundane attainments. Perhaps I should not start that part right now. And also there is another group of jhanas which are called immaterial jhanas. Have you understood material jhanas? If you have not understood material jhanas, how can we go to immaterial jhanas? It is totally immaterial to you now. So we wait until we become very clear on the material level, mundane level, before we go to immaterial and supramundane. Immaterial and supramundane are not the same. No. Immaterial and supramundane are also two different attainments. Immaterial, the very word immaterial is used for something mundane. Because when we talk about supramundane, we even don't use the term immaterial. Because it is immaterial to us. Not actually that, because it doesn't apply to supramundane attainment. So perhaps we can stop here and have 5 minutes break and come back for questions and answers, and then see how we proceed from there. Okay. Ring the bell. Ring the bell for people to come. Okay. I like to start with this question. All the questions are interesting questions, but I like to start with this. If we use in and out breath as an object of meditation, after overcoming the five hindrances, what makes the meditation a vipassana or a samatha? Can we accidentally be in samatha when we practice vipassana? When we use in and out breath as an object of our meditation, when we want to practice samatha meditation, I think I mentioned it yesterday, I did not go into detail. When we want to practice samatha meditation, don't go into details noticing of your breath. Don't notice the detail of your breath. Just find one single place where the breath touches and focus your mind on that single place, on that particular place. Exclusively forget everything else. Don't go into any detail. That's how we practice samatha. The aim of samatha meditation, as we have mentioned several times, perhaps we have not emphasized it enough. The goal of samatha meditation is gaining concentration. It has been defined as one kusala citta sekaggata samadhi. One-pointedness of wholesome mind is called concentration. So that is what we are going to gain when we practice samatha meditation. No matter what object we use, whether it is breath or something else, all we try to do all the time is to focus mind only on one thing and that particular thing, nothing else. When we practice vipassana, when we use the breath to practice vipassana, we go into all kind of details. For instance, in vipassana meditation, we advise people to see, sometimes in brief, we say, try to find out the impermanence, unsatisfactoriness and selflessness of nama rupa, name and form. It is very vague, very difficult. And therefore we break nama rupa down to five aggregates: form, feeling, perception, thought and consciousness. When we pay attention to the breath is something physical. And Buddha said it in the Anapanasati Sutta, Asasa Pasasang Khayanyataro. Inhaling and exhaling is another name for body. That is why it is called breath body, Khaya. So that is, out of the five aggregates, that is one aggregate, the body. The breathing is the body aggregate. But when we do breathing, we experience feelings, sensation of the breath. That is our feeling aggregate, second aggregate. Mentally, we perceive the breath, we perceive the feelings. That is our perception aggregate. And we know that this is breath, this is perception, this is feeling, and that is our thought. That is our sankhara aggregate, or volitional activity aggregate, fourth aggregate. Then we are fully aware of all this. That is our consciousness aggregate. When we breathe in and out, we become aware or mindful of all the five aggregates. Every time we breathe in, all the five aggregates are active. Every time we breathe out, all these five aggregates are active. Form aggregate, feeling aggregate, perception aggregate, thought aggregate, and consciousness aggregate. All the five aggregates are active. It is almost impossible to separate them. They work together, they arise together, they pass away together. And therefore they are inseparable. And yet, we can see one common denominator of all of them. That is, they all are impermanent. Breath is impermanent, feeling that arises with the breath is impermanent, perception is impermanent, thought that arises with the feeling and perceptions and so forth are impermanent, and consciousness is impermanent. And that which is impermanent is unsatisfactory, not because it is impermanent, but because of our attachment to impermanent thing, we experience unsatisfactoriness. If we are not attached to something impermanent, something outside, somewhere, we don't experience unsatisfactoriness. We experience suffering only when we are attached to impermanent things. Then, that which is impermanent, that which is unsatisfactory, also is because of these two factors, there is no something called permanent self. We will talk more about this at another time. I have a zillions of things to say about these things. So this is what we do in Vipassana meditation. Vipassana meditation, we go into as many details, we try to notice as many details as possible of everything we experience. Go into detail, analyze, even think. Anyway, so when we use the breath as an object of tranquility meditation to gain jhana, if we want to gain jhana and practice tranquility meditation to gain jhana, all we have to do is to focus the mind only on one thing without going to any detail. When you want to use the breath to practice vipassana, go into all kind of details, as many details as you like. And see, impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and selflessness of all that you experience, all that you go into detail. Any detailed thing you know, you notice, and see whether it is permanent or impermanent. Analytically going into various details is one thing, and knowing, understanding that all these things that you have gone into are impermanent, unsatisfactory, and selfless. Here is another question. What is the difference, different characteristics of jhana in vipassana and in samatha? Samatha jhana and vipassana jhana are, as far as jhana are concerned, the same. It is because of the means that we use to attain jhana that makes the difference. That is, when you practice, say, vipassana meditation, you see rising and falling and rising and falling and rising and falling of whatever you experience, impermanent. When you see rising and falling of everything that you experience, your mind becomes so calm and tranquil. Joy arises, happiness arises, you gain concentration. That is why Buddha said, yato yato sammasati khandanam udayabhyam labhati piti pamojjam amatantam vijanatam. Whenever one sees udayabhaya, that is rising and falling, in between moment of staying, as I mentioned the other day, three, uppada, titi, bhanga, rising moment, peak moment, and passing away moment. When one sees these three of everything that you experience, then Buddha said, labhati, piti, pamojjam. When we see this impermanence, one gains joy, tranquility, and happiness, which are the prerequisites or precursors for the attainment of concentration, to gaining concentration. And therefore, when you gain happiness, your mind becomes concentrated. And that is how you gain jhana, through vipassana. And therefore that jhana is called vipassana jhana, because you use vipassana meditation and ended up in gaining jhana. Therefore that jhana is called vipassana jhana. On the other hand, you don't use rising and falling and so forth, as I said earlier, focus mind only on one object, then you gain joy, happiness and concentration, attain jhana, and therefore that is called samatha jhana. It is called samatha jhana because you use the samatha as the means to attain jhana. The part of the question is vipassana and in samatha. Example, sharp, shorter times, longer times. It is not the question of time. It is the question of the means that you use to attain the jhana. There's another question. That is, Bhante, please explain what is the difference between samatha, samadhi, concentration, absorption. Thank you. Actually, I was thinking of giving another talk explaining the difference between samatha, samadhi, jhana, and these terms, explaining these terms. But since you asked me this question tonight, I can touch on them and go into details maybe tomorrow. Even Nibbana is called Sabba Sankhar Samatho. There is the word samatha is used. Sabba Sankhar Samatho. Sabbu padipati nissaggo tannakkayo virago nirodho nibbana. The epithets, the characteristics, the qualities of nibbana is given, are given in that formula. The word samatha is used there. Sabba sankhara samatho, calming all sankharas. You cannot calm sankharas without uprooting their roots. So, the preliminary practice for doing that is called samatha. Preliminary practice for removing or calming the body and mind is called samatha. That means tranquilizing the body and mind. Tranquilizing the mind, especially, by removing their psychic irritants, defilements. Samadhi is used in a wider sense. Samatha we used only for tranquilizing. Samadhi has degrees, categories, classes of attaining samadhi. For instance, we say upachara samadhi, appana samadhi, khanika samadhi, and so forth. The word samadhi is used in those different momentary concentration, excess concentration, absorption concentration, and so forth. So the word samadhi has a wider range of meanings. And samatha has a very narrow meaning. And concentration, absorption, actually, concentration, as we were discussing that all along, concentration is one-pointedness of wholesome mind. I should say one-pointedness of mind. Only when we say wholesome concentration, we have to say one-pointedness of wholesome mind. You can gain one-pointedness of unwholesome mind as well. And therefore that is unwholesome concentration. When you gain wholesome concentration, it is called wholesome concentration. When you gain wholesome one-pointedness of wholesome mind is the mind free from greed, hatred, delusion, plus hindrances and a whole host of other defilements. Absorption simply means that you are really one with your mind is one with the object. Now the word absorption, concentration, sometimes is misleading. Why? Because people think when you are in concentration, I'm going to spend as much time tomorrow explaining those sort of loose ends that I have not touched upon so far tomorrow. So I'm going to spend few minutes explaining what absorption concentration is tomorrow. But tonight I simply must tell you it is a misleading English translation. It is used for attaining full jhana, first, second, third, and so forth. There's another question. What is the relationship between non-self / self aspect of Buddhism and the jhanas? Now, the words self and non-self all apply to mundane things. Anything that is mundane, people can use these terms for anything mundane. So, jhana is something mundane. However, self-notion sometimes can play a very important role in attaining jhanas. That is why those who attain jhana have to attain right jhana and should be able to use jhana to attack the notion of self. If they attain wrong jhana, they reinforce and strengthen self, notion of self. That is why Buddha's, there is a beautiful discourse in the Digha Nikaya called Brahma Jala Sutta. Brahma Jala Sutta explains 62 different views. Most of all these different views are held by those who attain jhanas, not ordinary people. And all these 62 different views are based on the notion of self, of different shape and size and color and so forth. Therefore, I said, jhana, self has some very important role to play in the attainment of jhana. And that is why right jhana is absolutely necessary to get rid of that 62 different views. Otherwise you will strengthen them. You will support them, nourish them. I'm sorry, I don't have time to talk about this profound discourse, Brahma Jala Sutta. The very word Brahma Jala It's a very beautiful term. You know, the Brahma in Hinduism is the creator God. Brahma in this sense, Buddhist sense, is the most, the greatest, highest, confusing state. That means the best confusion. Brahma, jala means net. That means the highest net of views. Highest net of views means that you are deeply, incurably confused. So the word Brahma here is used not in good sense, but in sense that you are almost incurable, destined to die. Like, you have given few more days to live, so to say. That kind of serious, that is most serious net of view is called Brahma Jala. Okay. I think that answers that question. Another is, please explain Vipassana Jhanas, which I did already. A lot of emphasis is put on attaining the jhanas. Please advise on how not to become at the same time. And now, not to become, I don't know whether you use this term in relation to Paticca-samuppada. In the Paticca-samuppada, the word becoming is used, bhava. Bhava-paccaya jati. I don't know whether you have this in mind when you wrote the question. If you have this, or even if you don't have, answer has to be in relation to this particular becoming, bhava. Jhana, if you don't have mindfulness, if you have not attained right jhana, is a very good tool for becoming again and again and again. Those who have attained jhanas and die in jhanas can be reborn in different levels of existence. There are 16 Brahma realms. The word Brahma there is used in a best sense, good sense. The superhuman levels. If you attain the first jhana in the minimum level, that is, you just managed to pass, got the minimum passing marks. If your minimum passing marks is 40 points, you just get only 40 and just manage to pass. If you attain jhana like that, then you will be reborn as Brahma Parisajja, in the realm called Brahma Parisajja. Brahma Parisajja, Parisajja means retinue, the followers, ordinary folks belonging to Brahma. If you attain the first jhana in the sort of a middle level, little better, then you will be reborn as ministers of Brahma, Brahma Purohita, Purohita Brahmana. If you attain the first jhana in the superlative degree, highest degree, you will be reborn as Mahabrahma. So there are three levels for first jhanic attainment. Now imagine, if you are born in in the realm of Brahma Parisajja, as a member of the retinue of Mahabrahma, your lifespan is eons.
So this is a very good tool to live in samsara, if you do it incorrectly, if you don't have right jhana. The higher the jhana, subtler the mind, and very subtler are your greed and ignorance. I have a lot of things to say about these two things. Maybe tomorrow. I postponed so many things to say tomorrow, but I don't know how much time we will have. And therefore, your question is quite pertinent to the discussion. Jhana is very good, powerful means to perpetuate your becoming, bhava. So, and this also is a wholesome karma. Doing practice in jhana is a wholesome karma. Even if you do wholesome karma without proper state of mind, without mindfulness, without understanding, without wisdom, you still will be there enjoying the sort of bliss, and still you are just like, you know, when a dog is leashed and tied to a post very firmly, you know, firm post, tied to it, the dog can go only around the post as long as his leash can go. He cannot go beyond that, beyond the length of the leash. He keeps going in circle around the post. He will sit around the post, stand around the post, walk around the post, run around the post, and would do everything around that post. He cannot go beyond that leash. Similarly, no matter what you do with this, if you want to be or to become, you will become someone in this samsara, which goes in circle, round and round and round and round and round. Our purpose is to go beyond that. Anyway, jhana definitely can make you stay in samsara, make you become. Practitioner, next last question. Practitioner of meditation has been established in first or second jhana. Can you tell if a practitioner of meditation has been established in the first or second jhana? I think I have mentioned it in my first talk. Perhaps when we say something, anything important in the middle of so many other things, you may not remember it. So we have to be very specific and tell it separately. So let me tell it separately now for you to remember. When you attain the first jhana, you know, I cannot tell you. Don't believe that people sometimes, some people say, they look at the people, you are in the third jhana. You are in the fourth jhana. I cannot do that. I don't do that. Only you know that. How do you know that? When you attain the first jhana, you know all the hindrances are gone, temporary gone. You remember the hindrances. None of them is in the mind. Then you know your mental jhanic factors. You have initial application of thought, that means your generosity, letting go of things, you know, thought of renunciation. Renunciation, mind you, is letting go of greed, is functioning, and that thought stays in the mind. Your friendliness, loving friendliness, or metta will stay in your mind. Your compassion will stay in your mind. You don't focus on one particular single person. All person, concept of persons, beings are all gone. All you have are the feeling of generosity, friendliness, and compassion. Then you have joy, happiness, concentration. When all the joy, happiness, concentration, you cannot separate. You don't have to separate. They all work together in unison as a team. Then you know that you are in the first jhana. So before you go to the next jhana, you stay in the first jhana as many times as you want. Don't try to be like that cow or like a chicken. Chicken lays few eggs, and she is so impatient to see the chicks, she would turn them over and look, no chicks. Again turn them over, no chicks. And then turn them over, no chicks. She will never see chicks out of these eggs. Why? Because she keeps turning them over and over again. If you want to see the chicks, all she has to do is to sit on the eggs. Just sit. to incubate. To warm them up. And then one day, these little chicks, using their own very tiny little bills and claws, break the egg and come out. Then she will see chicks. That's what you got to do when you are in the first jhana. Don't be impatient. Don't try to jump. Wait, just like a chicken. sit on the first jhana. Sleep on the first jhana. Think about the first jhana. Attain the first jhana. Again and again and again and again. Then mind opens to the second. When the mind opens to the second, you will see that it's just like cloud removing from the sky. New step, new area. Then mind goes there. Then you know that you are in the second jhana. This does not happen to you without your knowledge. As I said, like a dream. Everything happens with your awareness, with your understanding, with your knowledge. And you got to have a lot of patience. That is the very rare commodity that people have. A patience. I think that is the last question. Perhaps we can have a little more short session of meditation once again. I don't think this time we have to get up, but you have to readjust your posture and sit a little more comfortably.